Your Honor, honestly, my recollection about what he said about how the photo array was put together was that he had a photo of Mr. Whitewater, that he took that to the person on the FBI staff and asked for an array of individuals with similar physical features, and that's what he got back. And so, so the process of Mr. McWilliams suggesting that there ought to be other individuals who live in the community, that's simply not the way they go about doing their business.
Yeah, but
the FBI.
Well, was that his answer, that that's just not the way we do it?
No, Your Honor.
I mean, no, I'm sincere. When he was asked about Antonio Baker and Cody Chilson, I believe it's said, what did the FBI agent really say? That's just not the way we do photo arrays?
Yeah, but that's my characterization.
Yeah, I understand.
My recollection of what he said was that he simply recited the process by which he went
it's
about
not
having
the way
arrest
they,
him.
Yeah, it's not the way they do business, right?
Those are my words, John, but
yeah,
I think it's a fair characterization.
Okay, thank you.
So what I want to say about this whole identification thing is Mr. McWilliams gave a decent characterization of the facts that led to this matter, but I want to give you some additional facts. First of all, Your Honor, Mr. Wolf and Mr. Miller were at this party at Lindsey Brown's place, and her place was a trailer. It was a trailer home. And the best evidence that we had about the number of people who were at this party was 7. That's the highest number, and that would have included both of the victims, Mr. Wolf and Mr. Miller, as well as Mr. Whitewood. So there's 7 individuals in a trailer, and they're sitting around drinking beer for a period of time. And the thing that is unique and distinctive about Mr. Whitewater is that he has this dark floppy fishing cap on. That's what I refer to it as a fishing cap. It's a flop hat, and it has marijuana leaves on it. And he's wearing this hat. And eventually, he ends up in a situation with another person at the party, this Taylor Moores. Mr. Moores apparently bloodies his nose because of something that Mr. Whitewater either said to Mr. Morris's girlfriend or to his sister. The record is kind of not completely clear on that. But when that incident happened, the person whose trailer they were in asked Mr. Whitewater, she says, you got to go. And so Mr. Wolf and Mr. Miller are there sitting around drinking beer. They don't know the name of Mr. Whitewater, but he's there in a small confined space wearing this flop hat with the marijuana leaves on it, with the slanty eyes, and then they have an additional reason to pay special attention to him because he gets kicked out of the party.
So you said that they didn't know his name. So this is the first time. Was the record show that Miller and Wolf never had seen or met Mr. Whitewater before this party at the trailer?
Yeah, and I think the extent to which that question was pursued was, did you know Mr. Whitewater before this party? And the answer by both individuals that they did not know him. As to whether or not they had seen him but not introduced, that question was not pursued by Mr. McWilliams or by myself. So they see him be put out of the party. Mr. Miller basically says, well, you know, we better get out of here. So eventually Mr. Wolf comes out. They leave Lindsey Brown's residence. They go north up to the Pony Express. And they get some cigarettes. And the jury, this whole thing about Mr. Miller having been drunk and whatever it is he tested at, Mr. McWilliams used that argument during the course of the actual trial. And the jurors were able to see the video, the surveillance video from that particular store when Mr. Miller gets out of the black Tahoe, you know, walks very regularly without any evidence of being drunk and then pulls off. So they were able to take the argument that he was drunk in consideration of what they were seeing about how he was carrying himself. But in any event, they leave and they head back south, and when they get to this roundabout, they encounter this vehicle, this blue Pacifica, and Mr. Miller, his testimony was that when he gets to this area, he can see this vehicle pulling up behind him. and he thinks that it's police. He says, cops. He tells Mr. Wolf to put his seatbelt on. And Mr. Miller slows down to about 30 miles an hour. And the evidence in the record is that he had his window down and he's smoking a cigarette and he's waiting to see what these cops are going to do. So he sees the cops closing in on him. He's trying to do everything as correctly as he can. And next thing you know, the Pacifica pulls up to him, and out of the past, the Pacifica pulls up to the left side of Mr. Miller. They're on a two-lane highway, one vehicle in each direction, and Mr. Miller says that this Pacifica pulls up next to him, and Mr. Whiteboard has the window down, hanging out the window. He doesn't have the window down, it's not tinted. He's hanging out the window, he's got a firearm in the air, right next to his vehicle, and basically, you know, I'm not going to say for these folks in here, but you know what Mr. Whitewater said to Mr. Miller and to Mr. Wolf. What's up now, MFs? And then he fires off a couple rounds. It's during this period that Mr. Miller has plenty of reason to be focused on the individual that's pulling up next to him. One, because he thinks that it's a cop. And then secondly, because the guy is hanging outside the window with a gun in his hand. And so it's at that point that Mr. Miller speeds off. It's like, oh my God. He pulls off. The record supports that they're driving 90 miles an hour down Highway 77.
I was thinking about the lineup, and you've described a very, what you've described as a clear sighting on the part of Miller to visual.
That was a tough moment.
So when the officers asked to identify the person, who did they ask to identify? The person who was in the car, or did they say who was the person at the party?
Your Honor, the lineup was put together by FBI agent Friend, and he went to visit with Mr. So this incident happened about 3 o'clock in the morning on May 2nd, 2016. He went to visit with Mr. Wolf 2 days later on May 4th. He interviewed him first, and when he interviewed him, he was asking him to identify who he thought the shooter was. And Mr. Wolf testified that his statement to the FBI agent was based upon not having actually seen the shooter. He said he did see the shooter, but not his face, because he said that he saw the gun, he's sitting in the passenger side, and he looks over and he can see that there's a guy hanging out with the gun, but he's not able to positively identify Mr. Wolf because of his positioning inside that Tahoe. He's able to tell the agent who the shooter was based upon his identification of him being the person who he had seen gotten put out of the party. The reason why he's able to do that is that because when Mr. Miller speeds away from this vehicle with the shooter in it, he tells Mr. Wolf, call the cops. And when he calls the cops, Mr. Wolf testified, told the jury that Mr. Miller told me it's the dude in the flop hat from the party that's doing the shooting. So, yes, Mr. Wolf, when he's testifying, based upon Mr. Miller having told him as they're trying to get away from him that it was Mr. Whitewater, the guy with the flop hat from the party that was doing the shooting.
But it was 6 weeks before they do the photo lineup after that.
Yes, Your Honor.
June 17.
Yes, Your Honor. That is correct.
And when Miller was shown the lineup, was Miller asked who was the shooter or who was the person at the party?
Mr. Miller was asked to identify the shooter.
Okay.
And because he testified that it was a person with the flop hat, with the slanty eyes, the guy at the party. So that's what happened, with Mr. Miller. He was able to identify him. He was right next to him. Your Honor, irrespective, of whether or not this lineup, if you somehow have a problem with it, if you think Judge Smith Camp was in error in admitting it, the evidence against Mr. Whitewater was so overwhelming, it is not at all dependent upon this lineup.
But he went, when the officer pulled the car over, it was Mr. Co-defendant, help me with his name.
Blackhawk.
And Mr. Whitewater is disappeared. So how can, if a jury hears that, say, where, Not there.
That, I mean, thank you for that question, Your Honor. So we never did get to the end of the story. So they get into Walnut Hill, and the cop who's seen them rolling down the road at this high speed and engaged in pursuit, he loses contact with Mr. Blackhawk, makes a turn in the Walnut Hill. Obviously, that's when Mr. Whitewater gets out of the vehicle. We know that it was Mr. Whitewater because Mr. Blackhawk's girlfriend said that Mr. Whitewater had come to their residence 3:30 in the morning saying, "You need to come with me so we can go deal with these guys and just jack me up." And Mr. Blackhawk and Mr. Whitewater leave. And then the last thing, Jan, is I see him down in two or three seconds. Mr. Whitewater was living with the sister of the girl who had the party, and her father testified that it was his .22 caliber Ruger that had been stolen while Mr. Whitewater would live in their residence from time to time. Your Honor, the evidence was overwhelming, and I would ask you to find that this case should be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you for the argument. Mr. McWilliams, Rick Butler.
Anytime the government tells you that the evidence was so overwhelming that the suppressed evidence was unnecessary, should beg the question, well then, why was it introduced? Why was it, why did they hear testimony on it three separate times? Why did the FBI do it? The bottom line is that it was very necessary to their case. The evidence was not overwhelming. The witnesses were all over the board in terms of the times that certain events happened, who was here, who was there. There is always the lingering specter of Antonio Baker and Cody Chilson. There is simply, identity was the only issue at trial. And as Judge Kelly noted, Mr. Whitewater was never found on the scene. Mr. Whitewater made no statements admitting guilt. He flatly denied involvement in this from the get-go.
There is one eyewitness who identifies him, right?
There is an eyewitness to the case, yes, Your Honor. And the trial would have gone markedly different if the one eyewitness had taken the witness in and said, "I was driving down the road, a car pulled up, and the guy from the party fired a couple shots at me, and that was the end of it." The cross-examination would have been radically more effective. My questioning about his level of intoxication, the lighting, the effect of the radio, his memory, etc., would have been far, far more effective. Instead, though, what we had was that plus three separate witnesses saying, 6 weeks ago, in the cold light of the day, we were shown a photo of six different individuals, and this guy was picked out definitively as the shooter, which are nails in the coffin. As Justice Brennan pointed out, there is nothing more devastating than a criminal trial than have someone come in and say, "That's him." And the light-up was not simply something innocuous, extinguished, didn't need to be added. It created a very substantial risk of misidentification. It not only affected, it not only supplemented Mr. Miller's courtroom testimony, it affected it, which is why the remedy for improper admission of a photo lineup is not simply to do it over, but to suppress the in-court identification. The two-part test is met very, very decisively by Mr. Water. It was impermissibly suggested. We know that because someone who didn't see the shooter identified the shooter, and it wasn't reliable given all the various factors, the narrow amount of time, the level of intoxication, all of those militate for Mr. Whitewater. The district court engaged in none of this analysis. I ask the court to reverse Mr. Whitewater's conviction and remand the case to the district court.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your argument, too. Both cases, 17-1258 and 17-1259, are submitted for decision. Thank you.
Thank you, Anderson.